And we're live. Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the Church of Grace. My name is Patrick Hayes, and today is Friday, January 31st. So I said we're live. I should let everyone know, I always forget to do this. We are live so many places, it's ridiculous. Just so you know, our church has a website, www.churchofgracegj.com. You can watch the sermons live on that website. You can listen to just the audio on that website. You can also download our church app, whether you have an Android or an Apple phone. We have an app, and you can watch the services there. You can listen to the audio just like on a podcast. Several of our services make it onto a podcast of mine that I've done for years called the Bible Thumper Podcast. You can look that up on Spotify or on Apple or Google Podcast. Along with that, we have a YouTube channel. That is the Bible Thumper Podcast YouTube channel. Now, that not only has our church services on there, it has hundreds of hours of me preaching the Bible and hundreds of hours of me doing podcast episodes with my wife and different preachers and different missionaries and different friends. Along with that, do you know we have a Roku channel? Now, some of you don't know what that is. That's fine. But for those of you that know what a Roku is, if you search on Roku, our church has its own channel, Church of Grace, GJ, on Roku. You can watch us live. So if you find us on any of those places, please like it, share it, make a comment, you know, show it to your friends. It will help get the gospel out. So with that being said, we are in part two of our study of Matthew chapter 24, which we are calling our study of the end times. Here is the foundational timeline for our study. We gave a basic explanation of it in part one. I suggest you go back and watch part one. It will help fill in some blanks, and you will better understand what we are going to be talking about tonight. Tonight, we are going to start in Matthew chapter 24, and I'd like to read Matthew chapter 24, verses 6, 7, and 8. I believe we're going to get all the way through to verse 14, and what we do is we just read through a chapter of the Bible, and we teach through it, verse by verse. If you have a question, go ahead and raise your hand and ask a question. Nothing wrong with that, and I will be asking questions of you. With that being said, let's read chapter 24, verses 6, 7, and 8. And ye shall hear of wars and rumors of wars. See that ye be not troubled, for all these things must come to pass, but the end is not yet. For nation shall rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom, and there shall be famines and pestilences and earthquakes in divers places. All these are the beginning of sorrows. So, to start off, it always amazes me how many times people use wars and rumors of wars as signs of the end times. Jesus specifically says they are not signs of the end times. When you see a war, when you hear of rumors of wars, he says very clearly in verse 6 that these are not the end. The end is not yet. These things are going to happen. Don't worry about it. Jesus says the end is not yet. Then we read in verse 7 about famines, pestilences, and earthquakes. And verse 8 tells us that these are the beginning of sorrows. This word sorrow is talking about a woman going into labor. We read about this in John chapter 16, verse 21. A woman, when she is in travail, hath sorrow because her hour is come. But as soon as she is delivered of the child, she remembereth no more the anguish for joy that a man is born into the world. So what we have to remember is the things we're talking about in verses 6, 7, and 8. These Jesus describes as the beginning of sorrows, and we're going to talk about that. But remember, everyone here who has children is familiar with the idea of going into labor. And one thing we all know about labor is that it increases in frequency and in intensity, and then in the end, it produces a baby. There are also times when you were waiting for that baby, and your wife comes to you and says, I think this might be it, and then 2 hours later, it wasn't it. Just remember, just because we hear of a war or a rumor of war does not mean this is the beginning of the end times and the end of the world. What I mean by that is when you see on the news that there's an earthquake somewhere, don't call me and ask if Jesus is going to be here tomorrow, because an earthquake or a war in and of themselves is not it. All these things are the beginning of sorrows. I am going to group all these items together and call them the beginning of sorrows. You should know that these things are grouped together in several places in the Bible, not only in Matthew chapter 4, but also in Luke chapter 21 and in Revelation chapter 6. Any questions? This timeline, for those of you who were not here last week, is a timeline called the Times of the Gentiles. So this is a break in our main timeline. The times of the Gentiles started with the new covenant that Jesus brought. It happened on the cross. The new covenant was established. And the end of the times of the Gentiles is going to be this event right here, the rapture. In between the cross and the rapture, many things are going to take place. Now, we've noticed, and we talked about last week, in the bottom left in orange, we see in 70 AD, General Titus came to Jerusalem, laid siege to Jerusalem, destroyed the temple, destroyed the city. Then, in May 14th of 1948, Israel becomes a nation again. These are two things that happened during the times of the Gentiles. While we are waiting for the blessed hope, while we are waiting for the rapture, the Bible says that several things are going to happen that are going to come prior to the rapture, and that's what we're going over tonight. So we can add the things we just talked about to our list. Here we have wars, famines, pestilences, and earthquakes in various places. This is what Jesus says is going to be the beginnings of sorrows. Now, we need to notice two things. Number one, each one of these words is plural. It is not one earthquake. It is not one war. These are going to be multiple famines, multiple pestilences, multiple earthquakes. The second thing we need to notice is that they happen in various places. When this happens, I have trouble believing that we will miss it. I think it's going to be obvious when this happens. I think it will be a period of great worldwide unrest. And the way the Bible reads, it makes it sound like no country will be able to come to the aid of another country because everyone will be suffering from these things at the same time. Now, let's look at famines. I want you to remember that I can't predict what a biblical famine is going to be like. We've heard about them in the book of Genesis when there's the 7-year long famine, when we're talking about the story of Joseph. What I can tell you is that the worst famines in history, I don't think they're going to be near as bad as a biblical famine. The Communist Party took power in China in 1949. A decade later, we saw the greatest man-made disaster in the history of the world. In only a few years, 36 million people died of starvation and brutality in China. 36 million people, that's roughly 10% of the United States population today. Children who were begging soldiers and government officials for food were dragged away by soldiers into the mountains and left to starve or die of exposure. People turned to cannibalism. If you were a stranger and you wandered into the wrong village, you were kidnapped, killed, and eaten just so the people in that village could survive. This happened in the late 50s. There are eyewitness accounts. People survived this and are still alive today. The gentleman that wrote the book on it, called Tombstone, was a man who lived in China and went through this. It was a horrible, horrible time. Farmers and government officials who were honest with the government about the grain shortages were beaten to death or buried alive. It was a horrible, horrible time. Pestilences, diseases that will devastate a population. The bubonic plague, known as the Black Death, killed one-third of Europe, possibly as much as half. The bubonic plague was unique in that even healthy people would go to bed healthy and would die in the night. It happened so fast, and so many people died that they could not keep up on burying the bodies. It affected cows, sheep, goats, pigs, and chickens, along with humans. Now, what will the world look like with a mutated version of a virus? Let's say Ebola. Maybe it'll be airborne with a long incubation period. A disease which today there is no cure for, which wipes out 50 to 90% of those who get it. And don't forget, the Bible says there will be pestilences in various places. Earthquakes. Now, I opted not to show you a picture of the earth shaking and buildings falling down. I went another route with the earthquakes. In 2004, there was a 9.2 magnitude earthquake in the Indian Ocean. It caused a tsunami with waves 100 feet high, moving at 500 miles an hour. It killed 200,000 people in 14 countries, and the whole event lasted less than 7 hours. That was one earthquake. I don't even have time to get into the wars part. My point is, you won't miss it. It will be obvious when the end times is approaching. Another point that should be made is concerning the Antichrist. A world leader will show up. He's going to unite all the people on the planet. He will be in charge of a one-world government and a one-world religion. Do you know that that leader could not show up today? Can you imagine a leader showing up in America who can unify the Democrats and the Republicans and the Libertarians and whatever independents are out there? Can you imagine that leader? No, because what is required for that worldwide leader to show up, those conditions have not been met. That type of leader shows up when the planet is engulfed in wars and famines and pestilences and earthquakes. That will be the time when all the people of the world will be looking for a powerful leader to come in and save us from all these problems. Now, kids, here's your first question. This is a tough one. What does a powerful leader do when they take over? What do? There's lots of right answers. They try to control people. That's good for a point. Anyone else? They find somebody to blame. Adolf Hitler did it in Germany. He said, I can fix this. Those people are the enemies. Joseph Stalin did it. Mao Zedong did it. When a powerful leader comes into power and takes over, they have to find an enemy of the people. Who is this Antichrist going to blame? Yes? The Christians. And that's a great segue into verses 9 through 12. Let's read Matthew chapter 24, verses 9 through 12. Yes, ma'am? Correct. All of this is happening prior to the rapture. Yep. Verses 9 through 12. Then shall they deliver you up to be afflicted, and shall kill you, and you shall be hated of all nations for my name's sake. And then shall many be offended, and shall betray one another, and shall hate one another. And many false prophets shall arise, and shall deceive many. And because iniquity shall abound, the love of many shall wax cold. The word then in verse 9 means after the beginning of sorrows, the following will happen. Remember that these events are the lead up to the end that we read about in verse 14. We haven't gotten there yet, but in verse 14, it says, and then shall the end come. We're not there yet. What is the beginning of the end times? Kids, what starts it all off? What is needed to throw the world into chaos so that the Antichrist can rise to power? What is the one catalyst that starts the end times? Nope. All those things are going to happen before. Mason? That's going to happen after the end times start. What's going to kick it off, Greg? Nope. Joe? Nope. Noah? The rapture. The event that needs to happen, that is the beginning, marks the beginning of the end times, is the rapture. Now, that means that the persecution we are about to look into in verses 9, 10, 11, and 12 will be experienced by all the Christians prior to the rapture. Now, this is what's important, and we need to distinguish this point. Every single born-again believer on earth will escape the wrath of God. But every single born-again believer on earth will go through persecution from the world. Those are two different things. The wrath of God, we are removed from and saved from. Persecution from the world, we endure. That's the difference. The suffering we will endure will document our faith. So to be clear, God's wrath, the Christians are removed from, persecution from the world, we go through. Everything that we are talking about in Matthew 24 up to verse 12 is pre-rapture. Matthew 24 verses 9, 10, 11, and 12. For that matter, we're going to get to 13 and 14, but just so we're all clear. These are things that are going to come after the beginning of sorrows prior to the rapture. Any questions? I know I'm moving along at a good pace. Greg, that's a great question. So the question for everyone at home is the Antichrist appearing at this time? Here's the problem. We don't have time to answer that question. We're going to get to that at the end of the night, but this is what I'm going to say. The Antichrist shows up in the beginning, or sorry, the Antichrist shows up for the first time in the middle of the 70th week of Daniel, which we know happens after the rapture. Now, is that the first day that we've all heard of this guy? No. No, he's already in power at that point. So, the Antichrist shows up much earlier than that. We just don't read about it in the Bible, other than some details. But on the timeline, his first big event is the abomination of desolation, the middle of the 70th week of Daniel. MacArthur? Give it to me. Everything we're talking about tonight happens before the rapture. Yep. Yes, sweetie. Antichrist. Very good. That is someone that is in opposition of Jesus. It also is used as someone who tries to be a false Jesus, meaning another Jesus. Good question. Very bad guy. If we're going to boil it down. All right. Next. Let's take a look at what is coming. Verse 9 in Matthew 24 starts out by saying, "Then they shall deliver you up." Kids, who are they? Mac? Close. I need a more specific answer. It's in verse 9. Go ahead and just read verse 9. What do you got? And you already tried. Yes? All nations. That's good for a point. Very good. They are the all nations described at the end of the verse. What we are talking about in verses 9 through 12 is a persecution that will come upon the Christians by the entire world. Now remember, this is very different from what we will be saved from by the rapture. The rapture saves us from the wrath of God. This persecution is coming from the world. Also, we read in verse 9, we will be delivered up to be afflicted. That means you and I will be turned in. Just like when the Roman Emperor Marcus Aurelius ruled the world. In those days, if you turned in a Christian, you got their land. It was a great way to root out all the Christians in the Roman Empire. Today, there will be tip lines that go up where you can phone in and rat out your Christian neighbors. Even before the KGB was established in 1954, there were Soviet Union tip lines where you could turn in your neighbor. Joseph Stalin allowed family members of potential traitors to be executed. You aren't the traitor. Your family member might be a traitor, and they would execute your entire family. This law applied to children as young as 12. The state had a propaganda campaign calling informants national heroes and encouraging children to rat on their parents. Do you know that the people in Russia at the time felt a sense of pride when they turned in a friend or family member? That same thing will happen again, except it will be against Christians. You say, "Patrick, I have trouble believing that." Less than 2 years ago, there were tip lines in many states and in many cities for you to report your neighbor if you suspected them of not following safety protocols with COVID. America's already prepped and ready to go. They had so many phone calls, they couldn't keep up. What else does verse 9 say they will do? Verse 9 says they will kill you. Pretty self-explanatory. What do you think they do with you after someone turns you in? They don't keep you around. There is a very public trial and an execution. The good news is that the trial will be totally a legitimate affair. It'll be something like an angry mob wrangles you in the parking lot of a liquor store with a mailbag over your head, and then they shoot you. You know, that's how they do trials in Cuba and in Venezuela. That's how trials happen in North Korea, right? We're aware of that today. Again, I should say, I believe this will be carried out by the state. It will be an organized manhunt for every Christian in the world by the intelligence wing of a worldwide government. And what is coming will put the KGB and the secret police to shame. The technology that exists today with supercomputers and AI to track people down will make the Nazis look like rookies. What else does verse 9 say? We will be hated of all nations. Now, kids, let me ask you this. How can the Christians be hated of all nations? How does that work? That doesn't make sense. Every single nation? How does that work? What do you think, folks? Go ahead. Politics. I like your answer. Noah? So there is going to be leadership that puts policy in place that is anti-Christian. But still, every nation, that's not that hard when there's a one-world government. And that one-world government puts a policy in place against Christianity. This one-world government will be the group you are delivered up to. They will be the group who executes you. Nowhere in the Bible does it say one-world government or one-world currency. However, the ideas are clear in the book of Revelation. When we look at Revelation chapter 13, verses 7 and 8, we read, "And it was given unto him to make war with the saints and to overcome them, and power was given him over all kindreds and tongues and nations. And all that dwell upon the earth shall worship him, whose names are not written in the book of life of the Lamb slain from the foundation of the world." All that dwell upon the earth will worship him. That's your one world religion. That's your one world government. Yes, sweetie. Saints are people who are saved. So anyone who's born again, anyone who put their faith and trust in Jesus as Messiah, they are saints. You and I are saints. Okay? Very good question. Any questions? The Bible definition of saints is born again, saved people. Yes, sir. It does happen after the rapture. No. So you got to remember, a one world government is coming. The one world government, I believe that the world is moving in this direction towards this one world government. You got it. There are, so, and I'm going to paint this picture in a second, but you got to remember, the idea is that there's one group that is holding up the world from peace and from absence of dissension, and that is the Christians. The Christians are vilified, and if we can just get rid of them, so I believe these things happen. The one world government and persecution, whether it's official or not, the exact timeline we can argue about, but that's the direction it's going. And think about this, because this is an easy thing for us to get confused about.
Folks, are there places where the Bible is illegal today? Yes. Are there places where they arrest pastors and throw them in jail and torture them for years and bulldoze their churches? Do those places exist today? Yes. It's called Belarus. These things happen. So it's hard for us to think of these things because we live in America and we've seen freedom for so long, but these things are already going on. It's just going to spread to all the lands. But we will be removed before the wrath of God is poured out, as we will see. Any other questions? Good questions from everyone. Tom, and then the young man.
I think I tried to mention this to you last week, but I couldn't place it. In 1 John 2:18, it says, "Little children, it is the last time, and as you have heard, the Antichrist shall come."
So follow me. You guys ready for this? You ready to have your mind blown? You ready? When is the rapture happening? Very good. Yeah. After what we're talking about here. Okay. But give me a day. Give me a day and an hour, just to use a biblical phrase. Oh, you don't know? Nobody knows? Okay. Let me ask you another one. You ready for this? Does Jesus know the day of the hour? No, he does not. Now, some people will argue, yeah, well, he didn't know while he was on earth, but now he knows. No, he doesn't. Okay. There's a reason for that. And we're gonna explain that when we get to the rapture. Jesus doesn't even know the day and the hour the rapture happens. We know the 70th week of Daniel starts after the rapture, correct? We know that the Antichrist has his big to-do in the middle of the 70th week of Daniel, correct? Does the devil know when the rapture happens? No. So the devil, for thousands of years, what has he had to do? He's had to have somebody able to step into the position of Antichrist, ready to go this whole time. And when these things start happening and the time is right, he can move someone in. But the devil's had to have someone on deck ready to go as the Antichrist because he doesn't know when it's going to happen. But he's going to see the signs of the time and he's going to say, okay, here we go. Time to move them into position. Because the devil doesn't know the day of the hour either. If Jesus doesn't know, the devil doesn't know. Yes, sweetie. There's not only going to be one rapture. As a matter of fact, there's been already a half dozen throughout history. There's going to be several more in the future, and we're going to talk about all of them. Well, I thought it was going to be tonight, but then Tom ruined it. So probably next week, but we'll try. Good question. Yes, what do you got? If you're a Christian or you have a Bible.
Yeah.
Afghanistan is one of, I think, 13 countries where the Bible is illegal. And they are probably one of those countries that would treat you pretty bad if they found you to be a Christian. So why Belarus? Okay, Belarus was formerly, if we go back to the days of World War II and the USSR, it was part of the Soviet Union, the United Soviet States of Russia. So since then, it has gotten its independence, but, I mean, come on, who's running the show, right? Russia's always been pulling the strings of Belarus, so there's still the same very iron fist, anti-Christian view in Belarus. It still exists today. Good question. We're going to keep going. We can add this to our timeline. Deliver you up, kill you, hated of all nations, for the name of Christ. You will be delivered up, killed, and hated of all nations for the name of Christ. Now, what, I don't know if I want to use the word funny, but what's funny is that many Christians are excited for the rapture. And I get it. I'm excited for the rapture. I want to go home. I'm ready to go. But I just don't think everyone realizes what is coming first. We are still in Matthew 24, verses 10 through 12, talking about those things that will follow the beginning of sorrows, but will precede the rapture. In verse 10, we see that many are offended. Now, I believe verses 10, 11, and 12 change gears. We are no longer talking about the world persecuting the church. Now we are talking about conflict in the church. This is going on at the same time but we are talking about conflict in the church. Many false and lukewarm Christians within the church will be offended by true Christianity. You ever meet one of them folks? They're alive today. I'm just saying there's going to be a whole lot more of them. All of the pseudo-Christian churches will be offended by true Christianity. Many are currently offended by the Word of God. There's lots of churches that just flat out are not going to preach or teach certain verses in this book because it's offensive and they don't want to lose anyone. They are scared of the Word of God. There are even some countries that have made policy around the world, but not all of them. 13 countries forbid the Bible in any form. It is completely illegal. An additional 15 countries are somewhere between illegal and highly restrictive, and another 21 countries make it dangerous or at least very difficult to own a Bible. The day is coming when every nation will collaborate in its hatred of persecution towards the Christians. I believe it will be a time of persecution that the church has not experienced since its founding in the first century. And it is going to continue to escalate until its climax, and then we will be rescued by the rapture. Also in verse 10, those who are offended will betray and hate the true Christians. So let me paint a picture for you. Leading up to the rapture, Christianity will be more and more in the way of what the world is going for. Folks, we have already experienced this. We have already heard about this. Think about President Biden and the last 4 years and their administration. Who do they call terrorists? I've heard many in that administration call Christians terrorists. You who believe in the Bible, you who teach your children the Bible, you are the truly dangerous people in the world. That's not Patrick Hayes making that up. That's been said again and again and again for the last 4 years. All you need is that sentiment to grow, and we are at the place that I'm talking about and Jesus is explaining here in Matthew chapter 24. The world sees Christianity and its beliefs as something that is getting in the way of a world free of conflict and divisiveness. The world will team up against Christianity and try to destroy it. The persecution in the church will reveal the traitors in its ranks. The false Christians and the weak Christians and the lukewarm Christians will see true believers as the ones who are the problem. If only they would give up their standards and principles, everyone could get along. The false Christians and weak Christians will sell out true believers to save themselves. That is the betrayal in verse 10. Do you realize that's the exact same thing that happened back in the 3rd century when the state-run version of Christianity merged together with the pagan nations of the world? The false Christians saw the true Christians as the problem. The true Christians were getting in the way of the entire Roman Empire all getting along and being peaceful and having this togetherness. So we can now add this to our list. False Christians will be offended, betray, and hate the true believers. In verse 11, false prophets will arise and deceive many. The false prophets will bring a false version of Christianity that everyone can get along with. Do you want to hear the worst part about this? I don't know if you've ever thought about this, but the one world false antichrist-led religion in the end times, what is it going to be called? I think it's going to be called Christian. It's going to be a fake version where all of the stuff that makes us Christian is taken out. And they just say, oh, yeah, these parts in the Bible that, you know, are against all that controversial stuff like abortions and homosexuality and all that stuff. Oh, yeah, that was mistranslated. That's a misunderstanding. If it's not going to be called Christian, it's gonna look pretty close. There's going to be a pseudo-Christian version that takes over the world. We're just going to get rid of all the controversial stuff. Now, in verse 12, iniquity shall abound. That is sin in the church. It will grow like a cancer. A lack of trust follows, causing the love of many to wax cold. Christians don't know what to do as they are watching their churches fall apart. Attacks from without and corruption from within. People no longer love one another and the church loses its effectiveness. I believe there will be a great transformation in the church. True believers will go back underground, meeting in homes as their buildings are demolished and their pastors are arrested, imprisoned, or killed. And I believe the climax of this persecution of the church will be the rapture. Folks, it's a bell curve. We started out in the first century in homes. We started after that growing, and then massive persecution came. And then we got to a point where all of a sudden, look at that, we're free all over the world and we can start building buildings. And then we started slowly falling away into this Laodicean church age of lukewarm Christianity. And now we're going to be hit by persecution. We're going to be driven back underground, back into our homes. And that will be the end of the church age when Jesus shows up and rescues the true believers that remain. We can add this to our timeline as well. Any questions? Yes, Mason.
What's the difference between everything you've read and the last 2,000?
Great question. Great question. Yes. So the question for everyone at home is, what's the difference between what you're explaining in the last 2,000 years? Great question. That is the reason that Christians throughout history have thought every century, could this be the end? Could Jesus be coming soon? Because locally, they've experienced these things, right? The difference is, it is no longer a local event. Just like, so all of a sudden, we now have worldwide events. Pestilences, famines, earthquakes, kingdom against kingdom, nation against nation. We have worldwide persecution against the Christians. As opposed to it just going on here or there, it grows, becomes more organized as the world is moving towards that one world government and that one world leader that we call the Antichrist. That's the difference, is that there's no longer a country to run to. There's no longer a sanctuary country where you can worship the way that you want. It is everywhere because it's one world government. That's what it's all moving to. Make sense? So that's the difference. Might be a subtle one, but it's going to be, right now you got to remember, what amount of earth is Christianity illegal? What amount of earth are you going to suffer serious persecution as a Christian? What do we think? Third, 10%? Okay, so that's our window, between 10 to 30%. We're talking about that growing to a point where you can't go anywhere. It is everywhere. Folks, I hate to tell you, I don't know how many of you keep up with AI. It is one of my favorite subjects to stay up on. I like tech stuff. I mean, for me, it's right there with apple pie and Chevrolet. It is who I am. And let me tell you, as AI progresses, you have to understand there's a point at which there's nowhere to hide. I mean, the secret police are going to have tools that we cannot imagine. It's going to be a time of persecution, a manhunt for Christianity that we will not be able to understand or even imagine. Yes, sweetie. That's a good question. So the secret police are basically a group that a dictator, a tyrant, a despot will get together, and he will control that group of police. So they're not like normal police, okay? They do whatever the bad guy wants. And their big job is to hunt down anyone that believes differently and arrest them and kill them. When will that happen? Sometime in the future. Mason, my apologies if some of the kids don't sleep real well tonight. Okay, I gotta keep going. Let's see where we are. Here we go. Okay, let's read Matthew chapter 24, verses 13 and 14. But he that shall endure unto the end, the same shall be saved. And this gospel of the kingdom shall be preached in all the world for a witness unto all nations, and then shall the end come. In verse 13, this verse is not talking about how we seek forgiveness for our sins and gain salvation. Unfortunately, whenever the Christian reads the word salvation in the Bible, we always think salvation through Jesus, but the word is used other than to describe your eternal soul. When the Christian hears this word salvation, it can throw us off. Verse 13 is not talking about receiving salvation because you persevere. Okay, we are not saved by our works at any time. We are saved by grace. What Jesus is saying is that those who are saved will persevere. Jesus is simply encouraging those he is explaining this to. This verse is just telling us the good news. At the end of all this, salvation awaits. Okay, at the end, there is salvation. Now, in verse 14, I need to start with this question. Has this happened in its fullness yet? It says, and the gospel of this kingdom shall be preached in all the world for a witness unto all nations. Has that happened in its fullness yet? The answer is no, because of the end of the verse. Jesus says the end comes after this gospel of the kingdom is preached in all the world. Jesus says the end will come. Now, the end of what? What's this the end of? Noah? The end of the church and the church age. What single event marks the end of the church age? The rapture. The time when born-again believers are removed. There will be no more church age when there is no more church. All the believers are taken away. That's the end of the church age. And remember, the church age is a break in between the 69 weeks of Daniel and the 70th week of Daniel. The end of the church age marks the time when God focuses back on Israel, and that brings us to the 70th week of Daniel. Any questions? Give it to me. So a post, yeah, oh, okay, so, and then the end comes. Well, so follow me here now, folks, okay? Let's just look ahead at the next verse in Matthew 24, in verse 15. When ye therefore shall see the abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel the prophet, stand in the holy place, whosoever readeth, let him understand. So without getting too far into the weeds, if you understand a few terms, you know what must happen for verse 15 to take place. Number one, where is the abomination of desolation? Where is this person standing? They're standing in the Holy of Holies. They're standing in the temple. Let me ask you this question. What temple? The Jews don't have a temple. The last one was destroyed in 70 AD by the Romans. A temple must be built. Number two, in Daniel chapter 9, Daniel is describing what we call the little horn. That is another name for the Antichrist. That is the one that will stand up in the temple and stop the sacrifices and will desecrate the temple. It's happened one other time in history, And that was back when Antiochus Epiphanes did it, and that started the Maccabean revolt. So, what Jesus is saying in verse 14 is that after all these things happen, then the end comes. And then what happens after that? Then comes the abomination of desolation. When does the abomination of desolation happen? That happens right here at the midpoint of the 70th week of Daniel. We're not going to get into this just right now, but understand the 70th week of Daniel, a seven-year period, is described as 7 years. It is described as two periods of 3.5 years. It is described as two periods of 42 months. And it is described as two periods of 1,260 days. Jesus could not be more clear that it is a seven-year period. And Jesus says that in the midst of this week, the seven-year period, is when the abomination of desolation will stand up in the Holy of Holies and cause the sacrifices to stop. So, the problem is with a post-millennial rapture view, that is all the way over here, after the millennial reign, 1,000 years post the 70th week of Daniel. What the Bible shows us is that the rapture must take place prior to the 70th week. And I thought I was going to have time to get here. And we don't need to bring up why we're not going to get there. But we were going to get into the rapture if we finished early. I was foolish to think that we were going to finish early. And when we go through what the Bible says about the rapture, it is so abundantly clear that we are removed prior to the wrath of God that takes place in the 70th week. It's going to be very obvious. Now, to go back to a question that we got before, okay, Joe Lee, you were asking about, aren't the Christians going to be removed before all the bad stuff? So the short answer is yes. Now, I should tell you that all the bad stuff happens right here. The bad stuff takes place in the second 3.5 years of this 7-year period. So we are removed prior to that. That is the time that we read about in Revelation when the wrath of God is poured out on the earth. We read about the bowls of wrath and the vials of wrath and the angels pouring out the wrath of God. That happens in the second half of the 70th week of Daniel. We, the church, are removed from that. Okay, we read about this in so many different places. No, it's a Romans verse. Romans 5:9, but God commendeth his love towards us, and that while we were yet sinners, Christ died for us, much more than being now justified by his blood, we shall be saved from wrath through him. Wrath comes from God. Wrath doesn't come from man. And we are saved from the wrath of God that is poured out on the earth. Now, just to throw this in there, because we're just kind of chit-chatting about stuff now. What is the purpose of the wrath of God that is poured out on earth in the second 3.5 years? Who is God's wrath aimed at? Nope, not Satan. Nope, not the Antichrist. Yes, Grace? Not the Christians. Mac? Not the lost. Robin? The Jews. The wrath of God in the book of Revelation is poured out on the Jews. It is judgment from God for what purpose? Glenn? That is the end. That's what happens. It is punishment from God for the nation of Israel rejecting Messiah when he showed up 2,000 years ago. The nation of Israel rejected Jesus in Matthew chapters 10, 11, and 12. Then they rejected him when he rode into Jerusalem on a donkey, declaring himself as king, described in the book of Zechariah. Then they rejected him the third and final time in the court of Pontius Pilate when they said, crucify him, crucify him. His blood be on our hands and on our children. They rejected him. That was a break in the timeline, started the church age. The new covenant described in Jeremiah chapter 31 started. Gospel was brought to the Gentiles. The church age began. And when the church is removed, God focuses his energy back to Israel, and the wrath of God is poured out on the nation of Israel. And what happens at the end of that seven-year period? Every Jew on earth who remains is saved. And they turn and they recognize that Jesus was Messiah. They recognize what they did wrong, and that stops the 70th week of Daniel and ushers in Jesus, rides down on a white horse, and starts up his millennial kingdom. That prophecy is in Hosea chapter 5, verse 15, if you want to look it up, where God is going to rescue the nation of Israel out of their affliction, out of the wrath that comes, and we're going to get to that. Now, although the wrath of God is for the purpose of judgment on Israel, the entire world feels it. And the Bible talks about numbers, very specific numbers, percentages of people that die during that 70th week of Daniel. Mason.
So, there's the rapture.
Rapture, got it.
Our question was, do people get saved
after the rapture in the 70th week of Daniel? I say yes.
Yep. That means somebody has to teach them that.
Yes. Very good. Okay, so someone has to teach them. Someone has to give them the gospel. Who's giving them the gospel? Great. Noah, how many people are giving them the gospel? Very good. Two prophets and 144,000. 12,000 Jews from each tribe who preach the gospel for 3.5 years. That's all they do. 144,000 witnesses, not Jehovah's Witnesses. Okay, don't get cute with me. 144,000, 12,000 Jews, 12,000 Jews from each of the 12 tribes of Israel. They preach the gospel, talks about it in Revelation. We will get there. They preach the gospel for 3.5 years. And there are also the two witnesses. The two witnesses, I believe, I'm not going to hold you to this, are Moses and Elijah, and they come back, they perform miracles, they preach the gospel as well. So, the gospel is still going forward even during that time.
They have to be Jews that accept Christ because they're preaching the gospel.
Brother, it doesn't give that detail. I don't know how that works. Yep. I don't know if there's 144,000 Jews who are saved that don't get raptured. I don't know if all the Jews who are saved get raptured and then 144,000 dream dreams and get visions and they get saved. I don't know how it works. All I know is there's 144,000, 12,000 Jews from each tribe. They preach the gospel for 3.5 years because the Bible says that so clearly. It's like, I mean, it's not, there's no way we can call it conjecture. It says exactly that. So, but yeah, the mechanism of how they get saved, I have no idea. Go ahead, sweetie pie. What are so bad about Jehovah's Witnesses? They preach a false gospel, and they are a pseudo-Christian church. They were started by a false prophet named Charles Taze Russell, and they stole hundreds of millions of dollars from their own people again and again and again by saying, hey, the end of the world's happening on this day. We need all of the believers in this church to mortgage their homes and give us the money so we can print more material and get people saved. And then after the day came and went, they're like, oops, looks like our math was wrong. And God came back and told us it's different. And then they did the same shtick like 20 years later, and the people were dumb enough to do it again. So that is why Jehovah's Witnesses are horrible. Plus, they never smile, ever. It's like their face is broken. I've never seen them smile. They're so miserable walking around every Sunday, knocking on doors, talking to people. And whenever they come to my house, I say, if it hurts that bad, don't do it. Do you know what an NPC is? It's okay. Yes, Miranda. Give it to me.
When is the mark
After the rapture, the mark of the beast happens. Very good question. Yep. Any other questions? I know there's a lot of info here, folks. I know it's like drinking from a fire hose. I say that a lot, but these are all very good questions. And every week we go through more scripture. It's going to help define the picture a little more. It's going to help make it a little more clear. And the timeline's going to make more and more sense as we go. Noah, what you got? I didn't hear it or see it, so I can't comment, but I don't doubt it. Folks, when we were looking for a church building to rent, I was going to many large churches in the valley. One of the church, I don't mind saying this, one of the churches was, I think it was a Methodist church. It was the one down on 30 Road. And they had a big building, so I went in there and I thought, hey, maybe they'll let us rent their space on Friday night so we can have a service. So I went in, knocked on the door, I said, hey, can I talk to the pastor? They said, sure, she'll be with you in a minute. Said, okay, I'll sit right here. And I went in and I had a conversation. This lady was a sweetheart. She was very kind, very gracious. We had a very nice talk. And I explained a little bit about who we were and what we were looking for. And she said, okay, well, she asked a couple of questions. And I said, how about this? How about you, or she's like, tell me about yourself and kind of who you are and what you believe and this and that. And I started to for a minute and I said, you know what? How about you just ask me the question you want to ask and we'll just cut right to the quick. And she said, okay. She said, how do you feel about women pastors? And I said, I'm 100% against them. No, it's what the Bible says. What do you want? How do you soften that? Just be honest. And she smiled and she chuckled and she said, okay. I said, is that a deal breaker? And she said, it's not. She said, that's not a deal breaker for me. She said, it might be for some of the people at our church. And she said, how do you feel about the LGBTQA+? I don't know what it is. And I said, well, I said, I feel exactly the way you think I feel about that. And she said, okay. I said, is that a deal breaker? And she said, no, but she said, it might be for some of our people. She was a very, very kind, gracious, sweet lady. After I knew we weren't going to get the building, we ended up talking for another 45 minutes. During that time, she told me, or while she was asking questions, she said, how many folks are at your church? And I said, well, on a good night, we sometimes get close to hitting 60. And she said, wow, 60. And I said, how many do you guys have on a Sunday morning? And she said, well, she said, there are 5 Methodist churches in the valley. There's the big one downtown. There's the one on 30 Road. There's one in the Redlands. There's 5 of them. And she said, all 5 together on a Sunday morning, we're lucky if we hit 150 people. And then she said this, and you might not understand this unless you've been in the ministry. And she said, that's doing pastor math. Pastor math. You know what pastor math is? If you're pregnant, we count you twice. It's a soul. I count it. We had 3 pregnant women in this church for weeks and weeks. All of them counted as 6. Baby counted as 1. Woman counted as 1. The Amazon FedEx delivery driver drops off a package within an hour before or after the service. Count them. 5 churches, lucky if we hit 150. I said, why is that? She said, every time we take a step in the direction of trying to be inclusive with the LGBT community, we cut our numbers in half. She said, every time. She said, worldwide, the Methodist Church is dying. It's going to be gone in a decade. Used to have millions of people. She said, we take a step. You got to remember, what does Jesus condemn the church of Thyatira for? Their tolerance. Tolerance is not a good Bible word. Jesus condemns them for tolerating. What do we tolerate? We tolerate sin. half the church leaves. She said worldwide, not just here in Grand Junction. She said, we said that homosexuality is okay. You can come and you can be a part of this church and you can be a member if you're a homosexual. 50% gone. She said, we made a decision that now homosexuals can take a leadership position in the church as a deacon or in charge of a Sunday school class. 50% gone. She said, every step, half the church is gone. And she said, those giant five buildings all around this valley, we are lucky if we can get 150 people on a Sunday morning. Do you understand how close we are to this? Now, I understand why you people are here, because you don't want to go to a church that's against the Bible and tolerates the sin and just says, yeah, whatever. Burger King Christianity, have it your way. Nope. That's not what Jesus teaches. Yes, Greg. They said no. Everybody said no. I expected everyone to say no. But you know what? It was because God brought us here. You know, it was a good thing. But you got to understand where Christianity is headed and where the world is pushing it to go. The world is putting pressure on Christianity to compromise and compromise and compromise and compromise. That's what it's doing. It's not Christianity. Very good, Val. That's exactly the point. At what point do we pile up the Bibles in the parking lot and burn them? Because we're just a social club. At some point, that's what we are. We're no longer a church. We're a social club. So, that is the direction that we're funneling down to. Persecution will continue because what is the idea? The idea of tolerance, tolerance, tolerance of sin is that the Christians with the standards, they're the problem. They're the ones that are getting in the way of the whole world getting along, and all of a sudden it's going to take an ugly turn and persecution's going to come and it's going to grow, and then all of a sudden there's going to be a relief when Jesus says, come up here. Okay, we are terribly late. Let's have a word of prayer and we'll be dismissed. If anyone has any more questions, you can holler them out. I'm happy to stay here and talk Bible the rest of the night. Greg, would you be so kind as to close us in a word of prayer?